For some people, ordinary asks, everyday things become intensely disabling. And it's not just, oh, you won't do it, or you're too lazy, or get with the program. It's like, this is not doable for me. The presence of this demand in my life is shutting me down and making it hard for me to even live in some cases. And so there's just like a growing early discovery that we need to be really attuned to these particular folks and their incredibly challenging relationship with demands. Once that came to light, it was like, whoa, maybe we all have a complicated relationship to expectations and demands. Maybe we've been raised in a really high demand world and we're all trying to keep up with an onslaught of expectations that are not realistic for us.
Is your child's challenging behavior leaving you feeling exhausted, defeated, and hopeless? You are not alone. And I want you to know you are not a failure and your child is not broken. Welcome to Calm the Chaos Parenting, the podcast for parents raising strong-willed, highly sensitive, or neurodivergent children. I'm Dana Abraham, parenting expert, and I have helped hundreds of thousands of families just like yours. Each week, I'll share simple science-backed solutions to help you feel more grounded, in tune, and deeply connected to your child, no matter what challenge you face. Start your journey from surviving to thriving as a family at calmthechaospodcast.com.
Hey, guys. Welcome back to the Calm the Chaos Parenting Podcast. Oh my goodness, do I have a doozy of an episode for you today. If you are dealing with a kid who just is always stressed out, they're refusing to do the things you ask them to do, any request is met with an automatic, no, I'm not going to do that. If you say, hey, what do you think about this? And they're like, blah, and they lose their mind and you're just not sure what to do. Today's episode is definitely for you. I want you to follow along. I've got a guest, I've become really good friends with her. I'm super excited to have her on. And so I know she's going to be able to help you out. So Amanda, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to talk to you. Every time is a gift.
I know. Same. I get super excited. We're working on some things together right now, including your summit that you have coming up, which we'll tell everyone about at the end and we'll link as well. But this is Amanda Diekman. She is the author of Low Demand Parenting. And I love so much about this book. One, it's an easy read. I love how there's white space. I love how you make it actionable and doable. And so we're just going to dive into this whole world of low demand parenting. Like, what the heck is it? How do you drop demands? Like, how do we still get our needs met? All those things. So before we do that, though, Amanda, can you tell people who you are and what you do?
Yes, I'm so excited to talk about dropping demands. It's my favorite topic. So I'm Amanda Diekman. I show up online as Low Demand Amanda, and I live in North Carolina with my three kids and my husband. We live in an intentional community here that is around centering people with disabilities in our shared community life. And in a previous part of my journey, I am an ordained Presbyterian pastor. So I also have a whole other career before this, starting new churches, especially around racial justice and bilingual congregations.
That is so fascinating. So talk to us about low demand parenting. When I started online 10 years ago, this was not something that was really talked about. This wasn't something, but you're seeing it pop up here and there and everywhere. And I just want to get it straight from the source's mouth. What are you talking about when you talk about low demand parenting?
Yeah. A piece of my bio that I should have shared is that I'm an autistic adult. A big piece of this and the origin story of low demand really comes out of the community around a particular subtype of autism called PDA, which can stand for two different things that have the letters PDA. It can be pervasive drive for autonomy or pathological demand avoidance. There's strengths and weaknesses to both names, but the origin goes back to the early diagnosis of PDA and the discovery that for some people, ordinary asks, everyday things become intensely disabling. And it's not just, oh, you won't do it, or you're too lazy, or get with the program. It's like, this is not doable for me. The presence of this demand in my life is shutting me down and making it hard for me to even live in some cases. And so there's just like a growing early discovery that we need to be really attuned to these particular folks and their incredibly challenging relationship with demands. But also, once that came to light, it was like, whoa, maybe we all have a complicated relationship to expectations and demands. Maybe we've been raised in a really high demand world and we're all trying to keep up with an onslaught of expectations that are not realistic for us. Like, maybe, and to me, it goes along with kind of a bigger move to slow down, to attune to ourselves, and to step off the path and find our own way. So that's all kind of context. Low demand is a nervous system attuned system of adjusting expectations to a person's real capacity, so that the things that we ask of ourselves and our kids are doable. Because when we remain in our felt safety, when we feel safe with the things that are being asked of us by the world and by ourselves, that actually enables us to do more. And we thrive in a context of safety, trust, and connection. So that's really what dropping demands is all about. It's not about letting go of that thing itself. It's about what it creates space for and what we've learned about humans' brains and biology, that we really don't need to be pushed in order to do our best. What we actually need is to feel safe and seen and loved. And then we do our best.
Talk to me about a couple real life scenarios of where this might show up, both as adults and as kids. I'm thinking about just the other day, I was talking with a really good friend of mine who had gone through a lot of really traumatic events. Basically, her home, they found mold in it and they had to leave their home and leave 90% of their belongings in it. Their child had lead poisoning. They were dealing with some other health issues. Their business was really struggling, and all of it came to a crashing head all at once. And when we finally got on, almost after a year, we caught up online and got on a Zoom call, and she was like, I couldn't even send a text. I couldn't answer an email. I couldn't send a text. I couldn't do anything other than what I absolutely was the bare minimum for me to survive. Yes. And to me, that's what I think of when I think of like us being at capacity as adults. And our stress is so high that we cannot add anything else on our plate. And it doesn't even just mean going to an appointment or helping at school, but it's the day-to-day things, doing the dishes, washing our hair, taking a shower, things like that. Is that how you would describe it when we're talking about an adult? Mm-hmm. And we just, even if we remove the aspect of PDA and autism, it really can, you're saying, yeah, this is good for all of us.
Absolutely. Yeah. I just always want to honor where it comes from at the same time as I let everybody know that, yeah, the discoveries around how our brains work, that's all humans. That's not neurodivergent humans or stressed out humans or traumatized humans. That's literally all of us, that we all have brains that are have an accumulating relationship to stressors. So what I would say, I love to nerd out on the brain science side of things, but I think for today, I'm going to stay a lot more in the practical tools. But if you want to push me in that direction, please feel free. Okay. So we can always go into the behind the scenes.
I think we'll do that in just a little bit. Yeah. Let's do a little bit of behind the scenes and nerd out around the science of it when we talk about just understanding why this works. Because I think when you understand the why, the how becomes easier. And some of that pushback that you have around, that many parents have around, yeah, but what about X, Y, and Z? When you understand the science behind it, it does become easier. So we can definitely talk about some of that.
Cool. Practically, a key question for, let's say, your friend who is like, I am so at capacity, or a kid. In our own journey, this grew out of my middle child hitting autistic burnout. And Burnout for kids looks a lot like burnout for high-powered adults. It's, I cannot do what is being asked of me anymore. The accumulation of stress has been really hard for a long time, and now there is this can't that is showing up. I cannot do it anymore. And for my little six-year-old, that was like, I cannot play anymore. I cannot walk anymore. I cannot talk anymore. I can't eat the foods I like to eat anymore. Just like an incredible narrowing of that window of tolerance down to just the bare minimum. And the same happens for us as adults, just like your friend. I cannot shower anymore. I cannot cook anymore. I can't talk on the phone anymore. So many things become hard. And so the crucial question is, what is hard? And by hard, I mean doable, but challenging. And we can have a certain number of things in our hard category where it's like, ooh, this is right on the edge, but I can do it, but it's hard. And then what is too hard? Where is there some kind of inner knowing in you that is like, this I cannot do? And to do that without shame or judgment, I think that is just so the crux of it, especially for those of us who were raised with a more punishment-based mentality when we were little kids, that when we couldn't do things when we were little and then we were punished for them, we often internalized that narrative. And so now as adults, we self-punish. We're like, you didn't drop the kids off on time. You were late again. And then the whole ride home, we are just giving ourselves a really mean talking to. And that, it feels in the moment, okay, that's so that I won't be late again. If I'm just really mean to myself, then I won't be late again. But what low demand wants to bring to the world is like, no, you are a struggling human beyond your capacity. And there were very understandable reasons that cascade of events happened. What I want to bring to the world of parenting is helping people proactively, meaning like on purpose, ahead of time, wholeheartedly, let things go. I think we need concrete teaching on how to do less, because everything in our whole world has been about do more and exceed expectations and achieve and never let anyone down. And we're people pleasers and we're terrified of rejection and we do not know how to do less. And so that's a big part of what I'm trying to teach is a whole new generation of kids how to attune and how to let themselves off the hook, how to honor their innate capacity and say when something is too much. That's one of the great gifts of a kid who yells at you, no, I won't do it. Is that, I mean, man, wouldn't it be great if we could do that? Somebody calls us to volunteer and we're like, no, I can't do that. Instead of, oh, I'm sorry, I'm just a little bit over capacity right now, but maybe next time. You know, sometimes we need some of our kids' strength, their willingness to say no and stand up for themselves. That's what we need as adults. Yeah, low demand is really about this practical question of what is hard and doable and what is too hard. And then we need to learn how to let that stuff go.
Dana here. And guess what? My book, Calm the Chaos, has officially launched. So if you enjoy the podcast and find the stuff we're sharing valuable, I'm 100% sure you're going to love the book. You can get your copy at calmthechaosbook.com. And if you use this link, you'll also get some special bonuses. So once again, the link is calmthechaosbook.com. Thanks. I hope you're enjoying the show.
Yeah. And this can, like you said, it can be really hard, both in a parenting sense and also just like from an achievement place as adults and especially as women, of what we are supposed to do, this, 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 and this, and letting go of that supposed to. And anyone who's listening along who has been listening for a while, they might have heard me talk about our stages of the roadmap. And right at the very beginning, I always tell people when we're in a storm, we have to let go of as much as possible. We just had a tornado warning rip through here the other day, and it was like 8:59, and the sirens are going off. They went off for about 45 minutes. We had to go to our safe place in the house. And at that point, it's not about how do we outrun it. It's not about what do we do? What are all the things we need to fix? What's the checklist? It just was like, how do we keep ourselves safe? How do we make sure that we make it out of this safe? And that is what we're talking about here. We're talking about the very first thing we should be thinking about as humans, but especially as parents and as parents of kids who are screaming, literally screaming out that they need us to just drop that to-do list and drop all the things we're focusing on. Another thing that I talk about later on in the roadmap is this idea when we try to fix everything. I see that so much in parenting is let's work on sibling fighting and let's work on giving you a growth mindset and let's work like all these skills and strategies and like all these things that we are trying to be great parents and we're trying to make sure our kids have what they need to be successful in the future. But when we do that, we're just adding more and more and more and more of, well, you shouldn't run through the house with your shoes on, or you know better, you should be taking your dishes to the sink. You know that we don't talk like that in the house. We're just reminding them of what our desires are and like what we want them to be doing. But we forget that that adds to this sense that our kids are never enough, that they're never going to achieve. And so I think that this is where low demand and calm the chaos, they are like peas and carrots. Like they just meld together so incredibly well. And so that's why I'm so excited to have you here, is because I think this is a piece that I don't know that I've really shared a ton about, but I just innately do. Like I'm like, yeah, just put it on your not to do list. This is something you got to drop it. We're just going to focus on the thing that's most important right now, and everything else, it can wait. And we'll talk a little bit about that, because I know that brings up a lot of anxiety for people of like, wait, what do you mean just wait? What do I do with all the other things? Let's talk a little bit about what this actually looks like. How do we drop demands? Like you've got a whole chapter on that. The whole book is really about dropping demands. You have some steps that parents can go through when they're approaching this new way of doing things.
Yeah. I think what I want to focus on is really what is a demand, and the first stage of identifying demands. There are 6 steps in the book that walk you through really in real detail. What I want to do is really grab someone's hand and be like, I got this. No one ever taught you how to let something go. So let's learn it together. But the very first step is learning to look at the world with a demand lens. And so that's where I want to spend some time. A demand is a very surface level expectation. It's the in the moment concrete ask. Get your homework done before you get on the switch. Take your shoes off when you come in the house. Wash your hands before dinner. Brush your teeth. It's boom. Here's the expectation. And like you said, all day long, we are a fountain of demands. I call us demand factories. Like we just generate demands all the time. There are a couple
and
of other.
Can you just clarify just a little bit right there? Because I think that when people hear demand and maybe they're a calm, patient, gentle person, and they're approaching their kids from a respectful place, they're like, I'm not demanding of my kids. Like, I'm not forcing them to do anything. I'm not saying do this or else. I'm not giving them punishments. And that's a whole nother conversation. But I think what you just said is it's just this expectation of doing and brushing teeth, changing our clothes, putting our clothes in the hamper, even as small as like making the bed. Like I don't make my bed as an ADHD adult. Like I'm like, no, that is like something that I can easily just say, nope, no thanks to, right? But that nobody's telling me to do it, but it still is this like demand that is being expected if I was somewhere else.
Yeah. So another way of thinking of a demand is it's a withdrawal of the energy budget. So assuming that we wake up with a certain amount of energy for the day, that even the existence of an expectation, whether we're able to fulfill that expectation or not, the fact that it lives in our consciousness is beginning to pull energy out of our system. And then whether we say, no, I'm not going to do it, or yes, I will do it, or negotiate how it's done, any response to that demand is then another withdrawal from our system. And that some of our kids wake up with a very small amount of energy in their tank. And so we have to align the number of withdrawals to what they have to give, or else we're going to be running a deficit, and that deficit will begin to erode trusting connection between us and our kids. That's essentially what happens, because they begin to think, well, I'm not safe with you, whether that's
cognitive thought or not, it may not be because you love them so much and these are very reasonable expectations and all of that. Yes.
Yeah.
And from the child's perspective, they are experiencing letting you down and mm-hmm. they are experiencing a world that feels not doable, where they aren't good enough to do the things that are being asked of them. And so their confidence and sense of innate goodness begins to erode, and their ability to trust you to create a world that keeps them safe begins to erode. And I say that as a person who has watched my child crumble before my eyes. Mm-hmm. And I had to claw back every ounce of trusting connection. It took 365 very hard days for my child to begin to trust me again. And I mm-hmm. knew I was a good parent before this, and yet it wasn't aligned for this kid. And I had to earn it all back, which I, in many ways helps me say never again from such a grounded spot. I'm like, I will not do anything that threatens what we have built together. And so that's my deep why mm-hmm. when it comes to letting things go. I'm like, you know what, brushing teeth and even eventual cavities and even cost of medical care, those things are not as important as the trusting connection that I have built with my mm-hmm. kid. And not every family has gotten to that kind of a point. Mm-hmm. Most families have not gotten to that kind of a point.
Thank goodness.
So having a demand lens is about seeing those little bitty asks as withdrawals for your child, and learning to see what is their capacity right now, what really matters right now, and are there ways that I can proactively drop the things that are pulling the most out to create space for those things that matter more. So I might say something like, I'm going to drop the expectation of toothbrushing at night because I know that the ability to, that it's really activating, it gets us into a whole tizzy, and then it's going to take an extra 90 minutes for you to fall asleep. The 90 minutes of sleep and you falling asleep feeling loved and cared for and safe with me is so much more aligned than the toothbrushing tonight. And maybe for the next 3 months, and then maybe we'll be able to bring it in. Or maybe it's something that we negotiate every day. You can drop something proactively for a long haul, or you can drop something day by day. That's just, you know what? This isn't doable today. So the demand lens is seeing those withdrawals. But there are two other layers that I want to bring up that are so important for us as the adults. Underneath the in the moment ask, take your shoes off when you come inside, is an expectation that we hold about what the good life is and what a good kid looks like. And so for that one, it might be like, a good kid is respectful and listens when I ask something of you. And so important for us to name that, because often we can drop the demand. We're like, okay, fine. You don't have to take your shoes off. But we don't let go of that expectation that a good kid would listen to mom, but you didn't. That's not going to yield. That's where I see people going wrong the most when they're trying to implement low demand, is they're just dropping those surface level demands, but they're not really interrogating their belief system about who kids are supposed to be or what really matters. And then here's the gut punch, is that underneath those generic, like good kids listen to their parents, is our real stuff. It's our adult needs. It's where our trauma lives. It's where our childhood wounds live. It's the kind of stuff that's so particular to you that nobody else could say it. Well, when I was little and I didn't listen to my parents, they shut me out and would no longer trust me. And it led to me as a teenager finding other friends to connect to because I disconnected from my parents, which was a terrible decision. And I'm still reeling from that to this day. It's like, okay, that's particular to you. That's what's lurking underneath when your kid can't take their shoes off when they come in the house. And that's the stuff that we need space and support and time to work our way through so that we can wholeheartedly accept the kid in front of us in light of what we've lived through and where we've been.
I love that so much. We talk a lot about the you piece and what we bring to the table. And the way you just broke that down is such a clear way of helping people understand, because we all see this, like, all behavior is communication. And a lot of people are adapting. If they could, they would. But then underneath that, they don't actually yet truly believe it. It's still, yeah, but a good kid would just do it. Like, even if they couldn't, they'd still do it. They'd try at least. And then under that, it's, yeah, but if I didn't do that, then I wouldn't get blah, 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 blah. And it's, ah, there it is, right? And you just broke that down so well. So thank you so much, because I think that shows up in so many areas. And when we're trying to adapt a really in tune and affirming approach to parenting. And I think that's what we have to really say. That's what you and I are both trying to put out into the world. That's what we're trying to recommend. And so when people are like, okay, I'm going to do this, it's good. Like, I can drop that demand. I can even drop the expectation. But then underlying, they're getting pulled by all this other information out there about boundaries and being the sturdy parent and allowing and just making your kids happy and being your kid's friend. And then they're like, oh my gosh, like, maybe that's what I'm doing here. And then all that doubt comes in, and you brought it back to the surface when you are back to the heart of it. And I always tell people to do this. What is your deep rooted why? Why are you actually doing this at the end of the day? And for me, like, when I got started, I had two goals. I didn't want my son to feel less than because other people didn't understand him. So as he goes out in the world and he's struggling, I didn't want him to think somehow he was broken and blame himself. But I also didn't want the opposite, which is what my brother did, blaming the world. Like, you just don't understand me. It's your fault. You're what's wrong, right? I didn't want those two things. And so I keep that at the root of everything I do and all the decisions I make. Yeah. And if dropping demands, and my son, he's 18 now, I can kind of see some of the end of the road now. He's 18 now. And so if dropping demands means that at 18, he's not yet living on his own, he's not yet found a job yet, he isn't driving yet, but this kid trusts me wholeheartedly with big, big thoughts and decisions. And he comes to me and he's like, hey, mom, I'm really thinking about this and I've been afraid to tell other people. Like, if that is where we're at, it's all worth it to me. I'm just like, yes, I'm going to keep this big why front and center, because I want him to be able to come back and say, hey, I'm struggling with this. Hey, I'm not sure how to navigate this. Hey, I'm trying, and about his identity and about who he is and about what he wants, how he wants to navigate the world. That's what I want for my kids, is to know that they have one trusted individual they can go to. And I think you're saying the same thing. And so I hope people listening to that, really, if you do nothing else, if you take nothing else from this whole podcast, I want you to take this idea that what we have underneath that, those thoughts, those beliefs, what we're bringing to the table, it's so powerful. Mm-hmm. And it really Yes. does affect how we continue to show up with our kids.
Yes. And I think it's another piece to name is that if you think you're fooling them, if you think that they can't tell, that you're still thinking, oh, but a good kid would take their shoes off. You're not. You're not. Everyone can feel it. And that's it's because I just love parents. I love them so much. And I feel so heartbroken by the ways that a lot of this advice is creating really awful situations in people's homes. It's putting people in terrible positions with their kids and making things so confusing. And one piece that I really see that is the pervasive pressure to remain calm all the time, that we're supposed to be calm. And so people shove that stuff really far down. They're like, well, if I'm just perfectly calm when they don't do it, then maybe it'll all be okay. But I just don't see that playing out. Certainly not with my highly attuned, highly sensitive kids. They know when I'm holding on, and they know when I'm mixed up and turned around, and they would rather have the authentic me than a version of me where I'm like, I'm fine, I'm fine. They'd rather me be like, gosh, I'm kind of mad about this right now. Or I just need to be honest, like I'm all mixed up and I don't know yet. And that kind of transparency and honesty with our kids, I don't see a lot of people talking about that. But I'll just say over the long haul, it has been so much more helpful and effective for my relationship with my kids than all the years that I put into forcing calm.
Yeah. And it, what ends up happening when you allow those feelings and you allow, you talk it out, like Dan Siegel calls it mindsight, right? Talking out what you're thinking, what they might be going through and helping them understand, because kids don't have metacognition. They don't know why they're doing what they're doing. They don't have thoughts about their thoughts. That's something that develops over time. And just the other day, we were out and having yogurt and my 18-year-old was sitting with us and he had his headphones on and he's in his world. And we're eating yogurt and my daughter was kind of like having just those hormonal, just those moments. And so I just, okay, talking is too much right now. We're going to stop for a minute. My son looked at her and just was like, are you having a hard time today? Is something bothering you? Is there anything we can do to support you? And I was like, what just happened? What just happened? And that's why it's okay to show that we're upset. But then we do want to also help our kids understand that later. That's the more important part. Not that we shove it down. We never show our kids that we're angry. Or if our kids come to us, especially like you said, are really attuned or highly sensitive kids, they're going to notice the energy of ourselves. And so when I'm sick and I have a groggy voice, my son used to actually get triggered and he wouldn't say it. He didn't know that's what was happening. But on days where I had this groggy voice, we would get calls from school every single time. We started figuring out it was my voice. And so giving him a language and a script to say, are you frustrated or do you not feel well? Are you tired or are you thinking about something? Are you stressed about work? I notice your eyes are like scrunched. Are you angry with me or are you thinking about work? And that really has helped as well. So that, but the more even talking about demands, like being able to say that ahead of time and say, hey, today I'm kind of stressed out. So you might notice I'm a little short-tempered. I might not pay attention to everything you're saying today. I just need you to know it's not about you. Mm-hmm. Like that just like drops that expectation that, oh, is this about me? Is this not about me? You don't have to wonder or worry anymore. So I love that you're bringing up all of these ideas and helping us look at demands from a different perspective, not just do the dishes, clean your room. And that's what I think a lot of people think demands are. And that is part of it. But I love this deeper look.
Yeah. And one other deeper look is that there are so many internal demands and some of our kids are really sensitive to the state of their bodies. And some people will be like, I dropped all the demands and it's still not effective. And that's usually because on the inside, those kids aren't feeling steady. Their nervous system is dealing still with a lot of internal demands. And there's like a whole list of things that I'll say, then it's probably time to look at these things. There might be a medical provider you want to pursue. Is there some kind of an undiagnosed chronic illness that you haven't found out about yet? Is there gender dysphoria happening? Are there auditory disabilities where like one of my kids has misophonia, where he's reacting to the sound of people breathing like that? We can't drop the demand that we breathe. And other kids are maybe having seasonal allergies where they're, and those things can show up in a refusal to do homework or an inability to fall asleep or a regression in toileting or any of these other where we're like, what, like, how is this thing leading to this thing? So looking at internal demands and thinking of that in terms of what Mona Della Hook calls the body budget, which is that idea of a demand as a withdrawal, is that sometimes we have to proactively drop things even that are important and that our kids can do sometimes, but in order to support them as they're moving through whatever it is that is a non-droppable demand, like maybe a transition from middle school to high school or the birth of a new sibling or a change in your parents' job that's going to impact the energy in the home, that then we let go of, we proactively release demands that are doable, but because we want to keep enough energy inside for them to be able to continue to meet their own basic needs.
I feel like I've got so many questions and we can just continue to dive into this. And so I might have to have you back on. We might have to talk about specific situations, dropping demands for specific things. I asked right before I came on here, I asked in my community, who's got some questions about low demand parenting or dropping demands? And I just did a quick check-in and there's 18 questions in 30 minutes. And I'm like, oh my goodness, we're going to have to do so much more, which is good because we're going to be doing some things together in the future, which are hush right now, but you've got a full program where you walk parents through low demand and dropping demands and doing this style of parenting. You also have a really cool summit coming up that is so awesome. We're going to make sure we put the link below. And so I'm just curious, I want to do a couple things before we drop, because I think it's going to take us a few minutes to get through it. But one thing is I want to talk to some of the yeah buts of like those mm-hmm. big fears of yeah. like, how do I know if I'm dropping too many demands, or how do we know which demand to drop? And you don't have to go into specifics there, but I just feel like anytime this is brought up, it's yeah, but how do we know what they can actually do versus what is just like too hard for them to do? And like all of that is coming up. Then I would love to hear about your summit and just some big takeaways that people that like really stood out to you mm-hmm. before we wrap up. So that's where I'm headed. Great. So let's talk about those fears that people yeah. have, those big, yeah. we've talked a lot about it, I think already, like here and there, but yeah, let's talk about some of those, mm-hmm. those big fears people have when we start talking about dropping demands.
Sure. I think the first one is, isn't this permissive? And don't we know that permissive parenting is terrible for kids? And mm-hmm. I'm not so certain that permissive parenting is as terrible for kids as the original 1960s research shows.
Hello? Okay. 1963. I just want to pause right there. 1963. Mm-hmm. Like we are 60 years later, like over 60 years later. And we are still going back to research from 60 years ago when we know so much more about the body. And when we're talking about the brain and the body, and when we talk about permissive parenting, they were talking about people who literally do not pay attention to their kids. Like they right. just, their kids just do whatever. They're like absent. They just let their kids like, I want to have ice cream 20 times today and tomorrow and for the rest of my life and never eat anything but ice cream. And they're like, whatever, right? That's what we talk about when we talk about permissive. We don't talk about meeting our kids' needs. We don't talk about being in tune with what's really going on with our kids. It doesn't mean, oh, yes, we can have a whole nother episode on this one because this has been firing me up lately because yes. it's a whole big talk right now. Let's do it. Let's have another episode on just this whole myth around permissive. I think we're asking the wrong question. I think it's yes. not about, is it permissive? Is it authoritative? Is it authoritarian? It's like, how do we show up for our kids? Boom. There's the question.
Yes. What does the kid need?
The kid need, what do I need? Boom. There we go.
That's like, the conversation.
A great relationship. That's the conversation. We're going to have that one again.
Love it. I'm happy to provide a link to you. I wrote a paper in a magazine called Divergent about my views on why I think that the whole concept of permissive is not just out of date, but not in sync with modern science. And
awesome. Yes, give us that link.
Okay, happy to do that. So yeah, big question, is it permissive? And the simple answer is no, that the core of what is destructive about permissive parenting, if there still is a category for that, I would say it's neglectful parenting and disconnected parenting. Those things are awful for kids, but it's not the ice cream. It's the fact that they don't have an attuned caregiver who doesn't care about them day after day after day. My kids can have as much ice cream as they want and they get tired of it because ice cream isn't that great. And that's true with everything. I trust those 1960s kids that they found their way through. But man, they did it without an adult, a caring adult by their side. And yeah, that is going to produce the worst outcomes. And I think that it's important to bring that up today with the reality of dissociated parenting, with how high the asks are on adults, how fast we're moving, and how much we need things like our phones and shows and sports in order just to recover from the incredible pace of the life that we're living. That does mean we all do well when we can, right? And if we're compulsively using distraction techniques because our life is so hard, that's going to have a result on the family unit. I don't think that's talked about enough. But low demand, no. Low demand is all about that attuned, connected relationship between the adult and the child. And I know that when I'm out in public, people look at me and think that I'm a permissive parent. So that's the thing that I always want to tell people. Like, when you're jumping on this bandwagon, it is a real opportunity to do your own deep work around caring what other people think. And every time I just settle back into that deep knowing inside of myself, like, I know and I know that I am an awesome parent. And it doesn't matter what anybody in the checkout line at Target thinks.
Okay, one more fear before we move on to your summit. Okay. And this, the fear, it's almost the opposite side, right? But they're all the same thing. But these fears that are driving these, like, the parenting, like, gurus at will to be like, but you need to build a resilient kid, right? Mm-hmm. That's such a big thing right now. And it's, well, if I drop demands, my kids will never learn what they can do and what they're able to do and what they're capable of if I just let them go through life with absolutely no demands. And by the way, we're not saying that there are absolutely no demands, right? That's not what we're saying. So go back one, right. Pick up the book. But yeah, so I just want to make sure there's so many misconceptions about this way of parenting. Mm-hmm. So can you talk about that big fear of, yeah, when is my kid going to ever learn, or how are they, mm-hmm, ever going to grow up and be successful members of society?
I call it the boss one day question. Like, yeah, we're going to have a boss one day. And what about that? So it's actually the opposite. The opposite is true of what people are afraid of in that situation, where if I am not the creator of expectations, if I don't hold the bar up high, then my kid will never fill in the blank. They'll never be independent. They'll never get a job. They'll never be able to whatever it is. And the reality, and this is what gets into the science part of it, is that is not borne out by the science of human behavior and the science of relationships. That what enables us to grow and thrive and be the kind of successful, whatever the best version of us is, which we all have different success visions. So your vision for success may not match up with your kids. And, but what enables them to be that best self is actually experiencing the unconditional trust and love of their parent. And that when we hold, because you can think back to the way many of us were parented, where we knew, we got these messages like, your coach is expecting you, or the team is counting on you, or go to your room and come back when you're ready to speak to me nicely. Like, we experienced high bar parenting. We know that. We know what that feels like. And it doesn't lead to that deep sense of safety that I'll be okay no matter what happens. That's a thing I had to do for myself as a grown-up, is create that resiliency in myself. That's genuine resiliency. And we have the chance to be that inner narrative for our kids from the start, so that by the time they hit adulthood, they know deep down that they are loved beyond measure and that will never go away. And that is what gives them wings to fly.
I love that so much. So you've got this awesome summit coming up, but guys, it's right now. It's literally like this week when this episode goes live, this is the summit week. So you can't really like dilly dally. If you're listening to this and it's not the original week that this episode came out, just hit all the other links that we're going to leave for Amanda and go check out all of her work. But this summit, you've brought together a lot of experts in different areas around dropping demands. And so I'm just curious, what were some of the big ahas or insights you had as you talked with these different, had these different talks, and some of the things that people can expect from the summit?
The two themes that I really wanted to draw out this year were complexity and intersectionality. I really wanted to talk about all of the yeah buts that have to do with the very, very real differences in the way that we live. And so I wanted to talk to people about, how do you do this when you come from a high culture or high demand culture, and where no one around you is practicing this? Or how do you do this in a way that honors that you might live in a skin that is very unsafe in the world? Like, how much does white privilege play into the ability to drop demands. I wanted to talk about that stuff with parents, and everyone who I spoke to lives out what they are an expert in. So it's not like talking head expert culture. This is lived experience. The vast majority of the people I spoke to are neurodivergent themselves, and so are already navigating a challenging world. And so I had two big takeaways. One was that a lot of the demands that we drop happen inside of ourselves and inside of our homes. They have to do with those very subtle moments between us and our kids or with ourselves. So it's not the big stuff that matters. It really is the little stuff. That was one of my first big takeaways. And the second big takeaway is just how toxic our definition of parenthood is right now. And that we all need a redefinition of what it looks like to be a good parent, because no one feels like a good parent. Everyone feels like they're failing. And that can't be true, because I think we're great parents, but we have been handed a definition that is making us feel terrible. And so a big part of what a lot of these guests talked about was redefining what it looks like to be a good parent. And I am here for that conversation.
Absolutely. That's an amazing conversation. And I got to tell you, I get invited to a lot of summits and I share it with the audience who's listening. But guys, this is a summit I am so excited about. I cannot wait for this one. So it's one that I hope every single person who's listening to this, whether you're in our community, you're in our coaching program, you're just joined the list, you just listened to this for the first time, whatever it is, I really think you should join this summit. Because even if you just listen to, and again, we're talking about a low demand summit, even if you just listen to one and that's it. And I know that you've done a lot to drop the demand of how, like the demands of the summit itself and having to listen to all of them and everything and go into it just saying, even if I just watch one, even if I just listen, even if I just join the community and I'm surrounded by people who are thinking about this and contemplating this and approaching parenting from this place of being in tune with our kids and with ourselves and allowing ourselves to do less. I am here for that all day long. So
thank you.
So I'm going to put it everywhere I possibly can, including the links in the show notes. Amanda, I always like to ask our guest one question, and I say, if you're sitting head to head with a parent, I know you do this every single day and you're so compassionate, what would you say to a parent who is contemplating dropping demands and approaching parenting from this different lens and different angle, but they're just really worried about if they're going to do it right, if it's going to ruin their kids, how to approach this? If you only had 1 or 2 minutes, what would you want them to hear?
Start as small as you can with dropping an itty, itty, bitty demand that's getting in the way of your daily flourishing. So I'll say we started with breakfast for one kid, because that kid was always screaming about there's too much milk in the bowl. Now it's not crunchy enough. He couldn't decide which cereal he wanted. It was the wrong spoon. It was just so stressful, and I hadn't even had coffee yet, and it was so frustrating. And so we started with breakfast. And slowly figuring out, oh, what if he ate breakfast upstairs in the hallway so that he doesn't have to look at anybody? Oh, what if we printed out pictures of all the cereal boxes so he could just point? What if I poured the milk downstairs so he didn't have to watch it go in the bowl? Just like tiny demands, right? These are like itty bitty things, but they added up to a breakfast routine that started our day without a meltdown. And I could drink my coffee and he felt so good that he could eat his breakfast without breaking the bowl and yelling at his siblings and all the things. And is it fair to say that that breakfast changed our lives? Because I was like, oh my gosh, this works. If we can do breakfast, what else can we do? And it gave me so much confidence to keep moving forward. So start as small as you can, but something that's coming up every day, because it takes a long time. And
I love that so much, because I think that people are diving into the deep end and then going, oh no, what did I do? And I always tell people, don't quit what you're doing cold turkey. Don't do that, because you're left without strategies of how to actually implement this new thing. And your kids are left going, what just happened? Yeah. So I love, love, love that reminder to just start super simple, one baby step, one tiny demand. What can you remove? And then what becomes possible after that? Amanda, like I said, I could talk to you all day. This is so amazing. And so where can people find out more about you other than going and grabbing your book? Get the book, Low Demand Parenting, for sure. Where else can people find out?
I'm Low Demand Amanda in all the places. And I also like saying that the book, there is an Audible version too, because a lot of people are audiobook people. And so there is an audiobook version of the book. I'm also at amandadeekman.com. And I love to give things away for free. So there's lots of free things there that you can go grab, including the first chapter of the book, which is all about our story of developing low demand and coming through burnout. So especially if you've lived that story, definitely you grab that first chapter.
Thank you so, so much for coming and sharing all your wisdom. And I can't wait to continue talking and developing more and sharing more of this, sharing more of your work with people as well. So again, I'm so honored that you came, and I know you've got a busy life. So just thank you. Thank you.
Oh, well, I try not to be busy, actually. I like to move.
Well, I just mean like you're running a summit and you're like taking care of your kids and you know what
that's
I mean.
True.
Like
that is a version of busy. That is totally true. Right. But yes, this is a highlight of the day. Thank you for having
good,
me.
Good. Good. I'm so honored that you're here. And for those of you listening, again, definitely go check out Low Demand Parenting, the book. Grab those free resources. We'll put the links in the show notes as well. And definitely sign up for the summit. It is happening right now. Like there, I know there's a little bit of a demand in that urgency, but it is happening. So head on over there and go check that out. I am speaking at it, which I'm honored to be a part of. But there's so many other speakers that I can't wait to listen to as well. And I want you to remember, like Amanda talked about it, but you are a good parent, and we have to redefine what we think of as a good parent and a good kid, and remove those expectations that we have to get it all right, we have to get it all perfect, and take it one step at a time. And with that, I just want you to know you're not alone, and I'll see you on next week's episode. Bye, guys.
Oh, and before I go, one quick note for all of you who are enjoying the podcast. My new book is officially live, and I know you're going to love it. So just a quick reminder, you can go get your copy at calmthechaosbook.com. And if you do, you'll get some cool bonuses as well. Once again, get your copy at calmthechaosbook.com, and I'll see you next week.